Man, it gives me great pleasure to introduce our speaker. I mean, this guy, I just love him to death. You know, he does a lot for Alcoholics Anonymous. And, man, I can't wait to hear his pitch. So, without further ado, I'd like to introduce our main speaker for this evening, Dank.
Hey, Louie. Dank alcoholic. Thanks, Glenn, for asking me to speak. Humbling where I am today. I fully believe in that. When I'm responsible, when anyone anywhere reaches out, I want the hand for A to be there always. For that, I am responsible. One of the main reasons I'm here today. Alcoholics Anonymous has given me so much that I could never repay. If I did 24 hours a day of nothing but service, help, and recovery, I can never give back what was given to me. We'll just start off here. I'm gonna mark this up on page, just on 181. I know where it says, as far as why I do this. Spend a great deal of time passing on what I learned to others who want and need it badly. I do it for four reasons. Sense of duty, it's a pleasure, because in doing so I've been paying my debt to the man who took time to pass it on to me. Every time I do it, I take a little more insurance for myself against a possible slip. So, my sobriety date's April 18th, 2015. Where to start? Childhood, let's see, I had a mom and dad. I was adopted at the age of 2. I didn't find this out until the age of 7 or 8. I had a lot of issues as a child. I think when I found out I'd been adopted, I never really just didn't feel right. I was very stubborn. I used to hold my breath till I'd pass out, and that's pretty extreme. That, you know, and I'm not sure. I mean, if that was just trying to disconnect, if I thought I could just temporarily die, and I know, you know, but I wanted to just leave me alone. Then they had this brilliant idea. We're going to send him to therapy, little Danny. We're going to figure out what's wrong with him. And they'd ask me about my feelings, and I didn't want to talk about him. And I didn't know how to talk about him. I didn't know why I did was because of feelings. All I knew is that's just what I did. So just to appease them, they'd say, well, how do you feel about this? And then I'd say, oh, well, this. Oh, no, 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 no. And I'm like, what do you mean, no, 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 no? Fuck, now they're asking me 10 more questions. And I'm like, frustrated. What, you know? It's at then when I shut down. I'm going to tell you how I feel. You're going to shake your head, go, no, 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 no. We need to work on that. And then I'm not going to win here. It's just not going to work. So I shut down. I finally just didn't talk about feelings. Didn't like to talk about feelings. My parents raised me. My mom worked at a thrifty drugstore, and my dad was a manager at Save-On. They were married in 1958. I never seen them drink, use drugs. Very responsible. They raised 4 children. Tried to provide for me the best they could, and which was very sufficient, absolutely sufficient. Always had clothes. I played Little League baseball. My mom was always at the games. My dad drag raced since 1958. From the age of five, I remember we always had a race car in our garage. Saturday, I always went to the drag strip with my dad. And I'm not sure where things went wrong. I would act inappropriate, and then they would discipline me, and then I'd be pissed off about the discipline. And see, we didn't have CPS. I didn't say, I'm going to go tell somebody on you. That's not how we were raised. I've been hit with a garden hose on the back of the legs. I mean, just multiple. Never punched in the mouth, never kicked, never choked. But a lot of discipline. And I didn't like that. I became very angry. It was you. I ran away for the first time at the age of 11. I was gone about a week. I loved it. Independent, do what I want. 11-year-old kid, God, can you imagine what... I look back now and I just think how horrible that was for my folks. But that was my answer to everything. Run and shut down. Isolate, leave me the hell alone. And those characteristics and traits continued far into adulthood, far into just the person I was. I ran away 6 times. I remember one time my brother took off and my dad sent me to find him, and then we just stayed gone for another week. And, you know, I'd come home or they'd bring me back. The cops, I remember we took an airplane from San Jose to L.A. because we just moved to San Jose, $19, kids fly free, TWA. We had it all mapped. We had a story. I got arrested for shoplifting. They put us in separate rooms. We already had our story planned out. The manager's like, if these guys are lying, I'm going to feel like such an idiot. And we were full of shit. But the thing is that no matter how much you discipline me, I always was willing to take an ass kicking. There's only so much you can do. I got a good tolerance for pain now. And I'm going to leave again. It may not be this week, next week, next month, but just the fact that I am going to escape was able to endure the things I was going through, because I know it's coming soon. I'm out of here. And, I ran away the last time to my girlfriend's house. And I remember her dad picked me up and she's like, yeah, I already talked to him. It's cool. I'm 15 years old. And I get in the car and she goes, Dad, Dan's coming to live with us. So I went, and this guy, they would drink, there was 5 or 6 of them, and they would drink 5-6 cases a night. But he would go to sleep or pass out, and he was up at 3:15 every morning. He worked at the Ford in Milpitas. He was a painter for Ford. And that's what I seen. I was able to drink. I was able to do what I want. He was responsible to a point. I went in the military at the age of 18, actually 17 and a half. My dad, before I ran away, or he'd sign me up for Project Up, or some delayed entry program. You sign up, you promise to go, and then you wait about 6-8 months. Well, when that day come, I really didn't want to go. But I did. I took an ASVAB test. I qualified in the top 1% of the Bay Area. I had a guaranteed A school. I was going to be a jet mechanic. I wasn't, you know, right out of boot camp, already guaranteed. So the whole time I was in boot camp, I just wanted to climb the wall. I was thinking of an escape the whole time. I'm like, fuck this. This is not fun. And, so I endured it. And I went to Millington, Tennessee, and I did my 14 weeks of jet mechanic school. And once again, I finished in the top 1% out of 300 people. I had guaranteed choice of orders. Buddy's telling me, there, he's like, dude, go to the Philippines. You won't regret it. I'd like to see that guy today and thank him, but... You know, here I am now, 18 years old, turned loose on women and beer. And I indulge excessively in everything. They gave me a job. I was handing out tools in the tool room to people to work on the engines. No. Top 1%. Engine. Not handing out tools so everybody else can work on them. Was very unhappy about that. I was entitled. I had, didn't like it. Drank, did everything I could, overindulged. I ended up getting court martial, project upgrade, this, that. Ended up, they just said, they had a deal where I don't like you and you don't like me, let's just part ways. It's called other than honorable. It's not less than honorable, it's not dishonorable. It's just like, hey, things didn't work out. So I got out, went back to San Jose with my girlfriend who had waited for me while I was out having a good time. We ended up moving to Pismo in 1986. Had a couple kids. My first daughter was born in 1986. I don't like drugs and alcohol mix. From 86 to 95, I did sell drugs, and I didn't run out for 9 years. I had everything I wanted. Everybody wanted to be nice to me. Everybody wanted to be my friend. I had plenty of money. I was making 6 digits a year. I had 5 cars, I had 10 guns, I had a nice place, a drawer full of 20s. Everything was good. But after 9 years, I stopped. And in the end, I found myself sitting on the curb, waiting for my unemployment check. And I ended up with nothing, just nothing. Took off to Colorado, joined a sales crew. We traveled 38 states. I drank. In 2001, got a DUI. I ran over the neighbor's mailbox, punched a hole through our trailer window because my girlfriend had been out all night. And she had this thing of lying without lying. She was pretty good at it. And so like the one night in particular, she said she's going out with her friends. And I'm like, all right, well, call me when you leave the bar. That way I know you're going to make it home safe. And so she called me about 11:30, said, hey, we're leaving the bar, but didn't come home. About 5:30, I'm pretty raged. I'm out hunting for her, and I find her, and I was like, I thought you said you were coming home. She's like, no, I just said we were leaving the bar. I lost it, man. I mean, I punched the window in the house. I tore up the house. She wanted her bowling ball. I put it in her car by standing on the hood and putting it through the windshield. Those are typical reactions. That's how I react. When I'm hurt, I'm going to hurt you back. Eye and a half for an eye, whatever doesn't kill you only makes you want to kill other people. That's how I lived. I look back now and I'm not proud of it. God, just the fear there's no reason anybody should use size and power to put fear into somebody else. It's just not right. I wasn't right. I was far from right. My mental state was far from right. Everything about me was far from right. Ended up, went to AA, anger management, for 6 months. Anger management didn't work. AA didn't work. I didn't want it. Had no interest. they were counting days sober. I was counting days so I could drink. Got out, drank. I'd been homeless like 3 or 4 times. And I never quit drinking because I always built back up. I always recovered. There was no reason to quit. I didn't see the relationship there. Everything good in my life was a result of me, and everything bad in my result was because of you. Everything was your fault. Everything good was my credit. Independent, I don't ask for help. If I ask you for help, then I lose that sense of accomplishment. I didn't do it on my own. And also, I have to say thank you. And I don't like either one of those. Came to Santa Maria. You know, I showed up on a Greyhound with a bicycle and a duffel bag, 2005. Once again, nothing. Ended up, I got a job, California Electric Supply over here on Blosser when they were there, 2005. Excellent employee. They're going to hire me on full time. They want to give me profit sharing. I was living at my sister's at the time, and I decided to smoke some pot. And they decided to hire me 3 months early, so that went to shit. I failed the drug test, fired, still at my sister's. I drank the entire time. I guess I'm going to go forward more. Basically, I just drank my entire life. That was it. 2011, you know, I worked for Culligan from 2005 to 2011. Got a DUI. I did install sales service, Montecito Carpinteria, Santa Barbara. I drank on the way home from work in my truck. I figured as long as I'm in my work truck, if I don't run into something or somebody, I'm cool. They're not just going to pull the Culligan service truck over doing the speed limit. And I'd drink a couple beers every day home. And then, like I said, I'd worked there for 6 years. That was my prestige. That's who I was. Got my DUI in 2011. Got fired again. Lost everything again. Homeless. 2011, they hired me back. But this time, I was that guy that I used to... I was a production worker now. Fuck, I treated them guys like dirt when I was an installer. At the end, I had worked there for 3 more years. And I remember we had a company meeting, and one of my friends, Brett, I knew the end was coming. I had seen it happen 3 or 4 times that I knew something bad was coming. And he told me, he said, if you get fired, you can always come live with me. And I said, ain't gonna happen. So I'm gonna check out. This man right here. And when you'd prefer death over help, something seriously wrong. He told me, he said, because he'd had a heart attack on New Year's, and he said when I was on my deathbed, or what I thought was his deathbed, and going through, he said, you were one of the first people I thought how much I'd miss you. I said, don't matter. So I can't do this anymore. Like, there's no way. I'm so tired of building, losing, building, losing, building, losing. Actually, it was building, self-destructing, building, self-destructing, building, self-destructing. So recovery, you know, I came in on accident. I had the many moments of clarity. I never pursued any one of them. I never thought, you know, I'll go to AA and everything will be all good. So, you know, this cat walks into a bar. I'm living with this lady I've lived with now 5 years. She brings over this friend of hers from high school, loves cats. I'm like, take this thing back. Just get rid of it. It's sick. It's looks like it's ready to die. It's just a mess. And so this lady, Sarah, shows up, takes the damn cat to the vet, gets its all its shots, medicine, everything. And I said, I can't afford to pay you. I said, and she goes, don't worry. You don't have to. And I said, all right, cool. It's cool. It's all right. So I get in a fight with my roommate again. I'm driving by, and by the way, when I worked at Culligan, I rode by this place. I'd been on a bicycle since 2011. I rode by here every morning at 5 to 8 going to work. And now I understand why I only see new people sometimes, because that meeting's only Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. You know, she said, I stopped and talked to her, told her what was going on, and I was just drunk enough where AA sounded good. She told me she had 10 years in the pro. She had 8 or 9 years in the program, and asked me if I'd like to go to a meeting. I'm like, sure, sounds good. I'll see you tomorrow. So she's gonna pick me up at my house Thursday, 5 o'clock. We'll get you to a meeting. Great. I wake up the next day and I'm like, oh God, I do not want to go. I told my friend at work, I said, dude, I messed up last night. He's like, what'd you do this time? I'm like, I told this chick I want to go to AA. I go, I got to get out of this. And I'm a figure outer. I, especially when it comes to getting out of things. So I stopped at the El Camino Liquor. I bought my normal beer and I drank a 40-ouncer and I made sure I smelled like beer. And when she came, she showed up with Big Book, 12 and 12, Living Sober, and a couple bags of jelly beans. And I'm telling her, I go, I still got beer in the fridge. I don't want to go to a meeting and then I'm not going to pour it out. So let me just finish what I got today and then I'll go tomorrow. She's like, okay, there's a meeting at noon. I'm like, yeah, got out of it. But I had made a decision that day. I was like, you know what? Here's an opportunity presented. There's definitely a need. Let's try it. So at 11:59, I took a 40-ouncer of Mickey's and I pounded it in 60 seconds. That's it, I'm done. My buddy shows up at 11 in the morning, no, 10 in the morning, got a case of beer. And he's like, did you get out of that meeting? I'm like, yeah. And he goes, cool, I grab a beer. And I'm like, nah, dude, I told her I'd go today at noon. And he's like, that's stupid, wait till Monday, don't, you know. Nobody, who quits on Saturday? And I'm like, you know, that's a good, I get it. But I told him, I go, I don't think if I quit today, I don't think I ever will. And I couldn't have been a more true statement. I came into Alcoholics Anonymous. Saturday, I sat down. They were having some stupid barbecue. People were trying to talk to me. Welcome. Yeah. She's like, you're coming back for the barbecue, right? And I'm like, if I feel pressured, you'll never see me again. And I went home for about an hour, and then I came back. I don't know why. I think because I was going to drink. It's like, well, let's go back. So I went back. I kind of felt obligated. Here she was being nice and doing that. You know, the least I could do. Hey, yeah, I'm here. You know, I came to a meeting on Tuesday, my third day, and I got this right here. And this is, I love this thing. This is my 24-hour chip. Everybody should have at least one. Some people have quite a few. Fortunately, I have one. And Jessica was getting her 1-year birthday, and they had these tables set up, and there were balloons, and there's Sarah again with all her shit. And they're all clapping and happy, and I'm like, oh, fuck. But, you know, I was pissed off. I hated everything, everybody, and everything about everybody. You guys had things. You were happy. You quit drinking. It just didn't. I didn't think this was gonna work. Absolutely not. There's no way. I've drank for 35 years. There's no way I'm never going to drink again. It can't be done. You know, I asked Jessica after about 5 or 6 days, and I pulled her over here, and I said, do you feel like smothering your sobriety, baby? Kind of like postpartum depression. After you got that year, was there a mental... where you know, like the postpartum depression, but with alcoholic. And she said, no, I'm good. I was like, okay. So I really planned on getting a year. I got into service. Sarah got me into service. 30 days, I'm at a meeting, and she says, I talked to your sponsor. You're going to volunteer at the spaghetti feed. And he looked at me, I looked at him, and she hadn't talked to him. So I went, I mopped up floors. I don't know what I, you know, I did what I was asked. I just can't believe how angry I was. I would come to meetings not wanting to drink, and I would leave wanting to drink, you know? I would flip people off. I'd flip off the entire group in the parking lot, ride off on my bike. Just angry. But I came back every single day. I did the 90 and 90, no matter what. Because the simple fact was I hadn't drank, and that's why I was here. They got me into steps. I worked with Steve. We worked some steps. 3 months. Things were looking a little better. He kept telling me, he goes, I think you just might make it. Might. People always love me here, no matter what. I didn't want it. But they did. I didn't have a choice. They always believed in me when I didn't believe in myself. They told me it's okay not to be okay. I remember I went to Jessica at about 3.5, 4 months, and I said, something's wrong. I go, I'm doing this, I'm doing that, and something's wrong. And she goes, you're sober, stupid. She goes, you drank for how many years? I'm like, 35. And she goes, and now you haven't drank for how many days? I'm like, 93. She goes, your body has no idea what's going on. Your head is even more fucked up. You're not used to this. I was like, oh, okay. That's okay, cool. So I took some chips, and I want to get a little farther because I don't want to run too long. At 6 months, I got my chip. Everything's good. Well, let me back up. When I took my 60-day chip, we're here, and the dude that was giving the chips, I couldn't stand him. And Jessica was, and everybody's here, and they're like, you're taking your chip, right? And I'm like, hell no. Uh-uh. I said, I don't like that dude. I ain't hugging him. Absolutely not. And she's like, you better take your chip. I'm like, yeah, uh-uh. So I didn't, and then I went to a Friday podium meeting, and there were 7 people, and they kept going, how about you, how about you, and they never called on me to share, and I was like, well, that's not right. I got 60 days, I took a chip, and I remember at the end, I was like, oh, I guess nobody has nothing, nobody cares what I got to say, because I had so much to say. I threw my chip down the street. It was dark. I ended up went and found it. And then I came back to the next meeting and I was talking to Jessica and I told her what happened and I was hoping she'd feel sorry for me and she's, it's not about you, stupid. You're selfish. You don't take those chips for you. You take them so other people can see that it's possible. Plus, you know how many people in that room wanted to see you get that? And that's when I understood. That was very humbling. That was when I learned about how selfish, how self-seeking, how self-centered. Me. And I learned a very valuable lesson that day. So I continued coming to meetings. I continued being of service to the best of my ability. At 6 months, I was still working at Culligan. I got fired the next day. I thought they were going to bring me in, tell me how awesome I am, and give me a raise. I hadn't made any girls cry in 6 months. I hadn't lost my temper that much. And when they brought me in the office, they said, somebody reported that you did a certain thing, and I hadn't done it. But based on my track record, it was very believable. And I remember I told him, I said, God obviously has better plans for me, and they don't include working at Culligan. If that's the way it is, then so be it. I hope you guys have a blessed life and try. Good luck replacing me. And I didn't mean a word of it. but they told me, and I've been paying attention a little bit, that if I have a resentment and if I start getting pissed off, then I'm going to end up drunk. Whether I mean it or not, I have to. I had to say it. Sarah picked me up. I went out and I went and looked for a damn job, something I'd never done. Got hired at Zodiac. I was like, these guys will hire any knucklehead. I know. And sure enough, I got hired. At the meantime, Steve and Victor invited me to go dirt bike riding. I told them no. And Steve wanted me to be honest. I didn't want to be honest, and he said, why, you got plans, this, that, and I said, no, the thought of hanging out with you people just doesn't interest me. because I was just all, and I look back now, it took a couple of years to figure this out, but the truth was, I wasn't the center of attention, they weren't my toys. If I start feeling awkward, uncomfortable, I have no escape route. And that's what I'm all about. Back up a little bit. When I first came to Alcoholics Anonymous, I heard somebody say the thing they were most fearful of was the truth about them. And that was true. And the biggest problem is once I quit drinking, all the things I had done started showing up. I started remembering things from 20, 25 years ago. And then I realized that the thing I hated the most was me. I had been kicking my own ass for so many years. So then I go back and I'm out there and I'm working at Zodiac. We went on this bike trip and had a great time. I got about 8 months sober. It's December 1st. Got a job. I'm riding my bike and I'm riding in the rain and people at work are making fun of me. They're 51-year-old man riding a bicycle, entry-level position. And that's when I learned that acceptance thing. It's, acceptance is the answer to all my problems. Hard, real hard. So at 8 months, here I am working. 10 days into the job, my sister came over. My dad had passed away. And it sucked. I remember going home and I wanted to drink. I sat in the backyard, bottle of Jack Daniels in one hand, just crying. I didn't know what to do. I called Raymond. His dad had passed away 3 months before. He walked me through it. And then I didn't drink. I'm drawing blanks. There's so much I wanted to say and so much I'm not able to tie together. And like with that acceptance thing, when I am disturbed, it's because I find some person, place, thing, or situation, some fact in my life unacceptable to me, and I can find no serenity until I accept that person, place, thing, or situation as being exactly the way it's supposed to be at this moment. Nothing, absolutely nothing happens in God's world by mistake. Until I could accept my alcoholism, I could not stay sober. Until I could not accept life completely on life's terms, I could not be happy. I need to focus not so much what needs to be changed in the world, but what needs to be changed in me and my attitudes. That's what got me through. Because I wasn't happy. My dad had a do not resuscitate band. That was his choice. I'm looking back, had I drank, how selfish that would have been. My mom wanted me to stay sober. People around me wanted me to stay sober. And I didn't drink. And then things started getting really good in life. A year later, I was employee of the month. Out of 300 people. At 14 months, I was still riding a bicycle. As far as that, things hadn't really gotten much better. Things progressed. I kept doing service commitments. I kept just working with others. At 14 months, when I got the motorcycle, I went down to the Five Cities group, started getting involved in meetings there. People welcomed me, and this time I accepted it. I was okay with it. It was okay. Got a service commitment. I do the beach bonfire meeting. I took that 100% out of ego because at 20 months, I'd gotten a Suburban. I have my license, insurance, registration, 2 vehicles. I'd heard about people when they get things back and they stop doing what was working, that they go out, and I definitely didn't want to go out. Took the service commitment. There's like, we need a guy to bring firewood to the bonfire meeting. I'm like, that's me. I got the truck. I'm all about me. Ego, me. I took that commitment, and I've had that commitment. I'm starting up on my third year. It's a beautiful meeting. I've seen him there. I've seen her there. I've seen so many people. I just feel like I'm missing everything I wanted to touch on as far as just the points, what Alcoholics Anonymous has done for me, and just the way, I had to have a complete change of ideas, thoughts, perceptions. Covered all that. Most of that.
Get him, what?
I thank God for unanswered prayers. All I ever thought about was, please let this end, let me not wake up, and just people everywhere, just leave me the hell alone. I'm blown away at the way I looked at me, the way I looked at you, the way I just, you know, we talk that page 151, that one guy over here. Oh, yeah, if you don't know what's on page 151, you should read it. And that described, not read it, study it. And that describes basically the feelings. And they talk about terror, bewilderment, frustration, despair. Terror, and I studied it. I actually looked up to see what these words mean and how they applied to my alcoholism. Terror is extreme fear. Bewilderment is the feeling of perplexity or confusion, lack of knowledge. Frustration is the inability to achieve. Frustration is actually the feeling of being angry or upset brought on by the inability to achieve something. Despair, the lack of or complete loss of hope. That made sense. The last 5 years of my drinking, that's all there was. So I think that's why we say we help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. There was no hope. I had no idea that I could ever quit drinking and enjoy life. That putting other people first would enhance my spirit. Working with others. I mean, just all this stuff you guys have taught me. It's so far above me. It goes against everything I am or I was. It was, you know, I've learned, you know, it's God, other self. It was always dank, dank, dank. you know? yeah. So, like I said, I was just complete loss, no future, wanting to die. And today, I really don't want to be dead. I enjoy life. I like who I am. It's been a long time since I've told myself, you're a loser. The self-pity. I don't feel sorry for me. I'm absolutely blessed by the people of Alcoholics Anonymous who have given me hope, who believed in me when I didn't believe in myself, and who want nothing more out of me than to see me never have to drink again. I'll just end with this. I'm just going to read this. This is read to me by a hard, hard woman in her, with a soft heart. It's page 99, 12 and 12. It says, Lord, make me a channel of thy peace, that where there is hatred, I may bring love, that where there is wrong, I may bring the spirit of forgiveness, that where there is discord, I may bring harmony, that where there is error, I may bring truth, that where there is doubt, I may bring faith, that where there is despair, I may bring hope, that where there are shadows, I may bring light, that where there is sadness, I may bring joy. Lord, grant that I may seek rather to comfort than to be comforted, to understand than to be understood, to love than to be loved. For it is by self-forgetting that one finds, it is by forgiving that one is forgiven, and it is by dying that one awakens to eternal life. Amen. Thanks.
Let's give Dink another round, huh?